Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
After the fire, the house did not feel haunted. It felt emptied. From the street, nothing about it suggested tragedy. The siding had been repaired, the front door replaced, the smoke damage professionally erased. Neighbors resumed their routines within days. Trash bins rolled out on schedule, lawns were trimmed. A small wooden cross placed near the curb lasted only long enough to fade in the sun before someone quietly removed it. Life continued in visible ways. Inside, however, time did not move correctly. Sydney noticed it first in the silence. The house had never been loud in an overwhelming way, but it had been alive. There had been the steady hum of motion, her younger brother running down the hallway, dropping things, asking questions before anyone could answer the first one. Doors opened too quickly. The closet at the end of the hall never stayed shut because he liked to wedge himself inside and wait to be found, giggling before anyone even reached the doorway. Now the hallway held stillness the way a held breath lingers too long. Her mother kept everything meticulously clean. Objects returned to exact positions, couch cushions squared and aligned. The hallway runner centered precisely between the baseboards. The air smelled faintly of cleaning products instead of dinner. It was not an obsessive transformation. It was quieter than that. A careful attempt to impose order on something that had not been orderly. Sydney adapted without speaking about it. She walked more softly. She avoided the stair that creaked. She kept her bedroom door mostly closed. The word normal felt inappropriate, but they were both attempting a version of it. No one said her brother's name casually anymore. It surfaced only in deliberate conversation, spoken gently and with effort. Sydney avoided it altogether. The name felt fragile in her mouth, like something that might break if released too quickly. A month after the fire, Sydney began taking photographs around the house. She told her mother she was rearranging her room and needed reference images. It sounded practical enough that it went unquestioned. In truth, she was not sure why she was doing it. Perhaps she wanted proof that things had remained intact. Perhaps she wanted something solid to hold on to. She photographed her desk, her bookshelf, the corner where afternoon light hit the wall. Then she stepped into the hallway and lifted her phone without thinking. The hallway was narrow, framed with family photos that now felt like artifacts from a different life. The sliding closet door at the end stood closed, slightly misaligned the way it had always been. She snapped the picture and lowered the phone. It was only later, sitting on the edge of her bed, that she noticed the detail. In the image, the closet door was not fully closed. It stood open a few inches. Sydney frowned and zoomed in. The interior was dark, but along the carpet near the baseboard was a shape, small, low to the ground, curved slightly inward. It was not sharply defined. It could have been a trick of lighting. The quality was grainy once enlarged, yet the position of it was unmistakable. It was exactly where he used to sit. Her first reaction was not fear. It was recognition. She stood immediately and walked back into the hallway. The closet door was closed. She was certain of it. She had not opened it since the fire. Her hand hovered before sliding the door aside. It moved with the same reluctant friction it always had. Inside, the carpet lay clean and empty. No toys, no shoes, no stray jacket that might cast a shadow. Sydney knelt and ran her palm along the carpet fibers. Nothing. She stood slowly and closed the door again. Back in her room, she looked at the photograph once more. The shadow remained. It was subtle enough to dismiss, but it pressed on her mind with uncomfortable insistence. She told herself, it was compression. A lighting artifact, a coincidence of angles. She repeated those explanations until they felt thin. That night she lay awake longer than usual, listening to the house. Grief does something peculiar to perception. It sharpens it while distorting it at the same time. Every small sound carried weight. The refrigerator cycling on, the faint tick of cooling pipes, a car passing outside. She cataloged each one automatically, measuring it against memory. At 1:17 a.m., the hallway light flickered once. Sydney sat upright. It did not flicker again. It steadied immediately, as if nothing had happened. She rose quietly from bed and opened her door just enough to see down the hall. The nightlight cast a low amber glow along the baseboards. The closet door at the end was shut. The house felt still, but not empty. She stood there for a full minute before whispering into the hallway, "If you're here, you don't have to hide." The words felt foolish even as she said them, but they came from a place she could not suppress. Nothing answered. No movement followed. No door shifted. The light remained steady. Sydney closed her door and returned to bed, telling herself she had projected meaning onto electrical wiring. In the morning, the closet door was open, only slightly, just enough to reveal a sliver of darkness inside. She stopped in the hallway with her backpack hanging from one shoulder. Her mother was in the kitchen, moving quietly. Sydney did not remember opening it. She had closed it deliberately the night before. She slid it shut again without comment. At school, she looked at the photograph repeatedly between classes. The shadow had not changed. It did not look more defined or less. It simply existed, waiting to be interpreted. By the end of the week, two more small things happened. The hallway light turned on while she was downstairs with her mother. They both saw it illuminate at the same time. Her mother attributed it to a faulty switch and made a note to call an electrician. Later that evening, Sydney felt the faintest sensation on her shoulder as she stood at the kitchen sink. A tap, not forceful, not painful. Just a brief, deliberate touch. She turned immediately. No one stood behind her. Her mother was in the living room. The television murmured softly. Sydney remained still, heart racing for reasons she did not entirely understand. The tap had felt familiar. That was what unsettled her most. She did not mention it that night. She carried it quietly, the way she carried the photograph on her phone. Because in a house shaped by absence, even the smallest suggestion of presence begins to feel like a gift. And gifts, especially in grief, are very hard to question. Sydney tried at first to convince herself that the photograph had been nothing more than light behaving badly. There were enough reasonable explanations to choose from. Phone cameras, distorted shadow, doors shifted slightly on uneven tracks, electrical wiring flickered. Old houses made small, inexplicable noises that only seemed meaningful when someone was listening too closely. And she was listening too closely. The tap on her shoulder at the kitchen sink could have been tension, a muscled twitch, a trick of nerves that had not yet learned how to quiet themselves after weeks of strain. She repeated that explanation silently, the way someone repeats a prayer they don't fully believe but are afraid to abandon. But the house did not return to normal. Two nights after the first tap, Sydney was brushing her teeth when she heard a faint click from the hallway. It was a subtle sound, easy to ignore if she hadn't already been paying attention to everything. The closet light. She stepped into the hall with the toothbrush still in her hand. The sliding door at the end was shut, but a thin line of light glowed from the seam where it met the frame. She stood still, watching it. The glow did not flicker. It did not waver. It simply existed, steady and deliberate. Sydney walked slowly toward it and slid the door open. The interior was exactly as it should have been. Coats hung in place. The vacuum leaned against the wall. The carpet was empty. She reached inside and switched the light off, then stood there a moment longer, as if waiting for something to contradict her. Nothing did. The electrician her mother called 2 days later found no fault in the wiring. The switches worked as they should. The fixtures were intact. "Sometimes things just act up," he said in a reassuring tone that sounded practiced. Sydney watched him leave with the quiet awareness that his explanation had not touched what she was experiencing. The second tap happened at the kitchen table. She was reading, or pretending to, when she felt it again. Light, precise contact against her upper back. Not forceful, not accidental, intentional. She turned immediately. The kitchen was empty. Her mother was in the laundry room, humming softly. The air behind Sydney felt still, untouched by movement. Her heartbeat accelerated not because she was frightened, but because the sensation had been unmistakably familiar. It had carried the same casual affection her brother used to show when he wanted her attention without interrupting. That familiarity was what made it dangerous. That night, Sydney stood in the hallway facing the closet door. She had not planned to speak, but the words came anyway. "If you're here," she said quietly, "you don't have to scare us." The hallway light flickered once as her breath caught. The flicker steadied, and for a fleeting second, relief moved through her chest, like warmth. "If it's you," she added, barely louder than a whisper, "you can just be here." The closet light turned on, not gradually, not with hesitation. It illuminated cleanly behind the closed door, a thin strip of brightness escaping along the frame. Sydney felt something in her chest shift. It felt like response. It felt like acknowledgement. She stepped closer but did not open the door. Instead, she stood there, listening. In the quiet, she thought she heard something. A faint shifting sound, like fabric brushing against carpet. It was so subtle she couldn't be certain, but it sent a tremor through her anyway. "Jacob," she whispered before she could stop herself. The closet light went out instantly. Not a flicker, not a fade. It snapped off. Sydney stood frozen in the sudden dimness, her pulse pounding in her ears. The darkness felt deliberate, like a retreat. And for a moment, she allowed herself to believe that whatever was there had responded gently because she had asked it to. That belief held until the following night. Sydney lay in bed with her door closed, not yet asleep, but drifting toward it. The house had settled into its late-night quiet. Her mother's bedroom door had shut an hour earlier. No television murmured downstairs. The stillness felt complete. Then she heard it, a door closing down the hallway. Not the soft click of a latch catching. A firm, controlled close. Sydney opened her eyes slowly. She listened for movement that would make it ordinary. Footsteps, a cough, a faucet running. Nothing followed. She sat up in bed, every nerve alert. "Mom?" she called softly. No answer. The hallway beyond her closed door remained silent. Sydney stood and crossed the room, her hand hovering on her doorknob before turning it carefully. She opened the door just enough to see into the hall. The closet door was shut. The bathroom door at the far end stood closed. The nightlight glowed faintly near the baseboard. Everything looked exactly as it should have. Then the bathroom doorknob turned slowly. Sydney watched it lower, the metal catching the light. It held there for a moment, the latch pressing against the frame as if testing it. Then it released. Her breath stalled. The knob turned again, slower this time, more deliberate, as though whoever or whatever was touching it was experimenting with the motion. There was no laughter, no whisper, no playful energy in the air. Only the careful mechanics of something learning the house. Sydney stepped backward into her bedroom without meaning to. The knob stopped moving immediately. The silence that followed felt heavier than the movement itself. She closed her bedroom door and locked it, her fingers trembling slightly on the metal. It was then, standing in the dark with her back against the door, that the shape of the truth began to form. The taps had felt affectionate, the closet light had felt responsive, but the photograph had felt like a sign. But the bathroom doorknob turning in the middle of the night did not feel like a 7-year-old boy. It felt like something else, something patient enough to offer comfort first, and bold enough to test boundaries once it was believed. Sydney slid down to sit on the floor, staring at the door as though it might move again. It didn't. The house returned to stillness, but as she lay awake for the rest of the night, she understood something with growing clarity. Whatever was in the hallway was no longer asking to be recognized. It was beginning to ask for control. The house did not explode into chaos after the bathroom doorknob turned. If anything, it grew quieter. And that quiet carried more weight than noise ever could. For several days, nothing happened. The closet light stayed off. The hallway remained undisturbed. There were no taps on Sydney's shoulder, no unexplained clicks from down the corridor. The absence of activity should have brought relief, and on the surface, it seemed to. Her mother moved through the house with slightly less tension in her posture. She began cooking dinner again instead of relying on reheated meals. The television stayed on in the evenings, not loud but present, filling the rooms with ordinary sound. Yet Sydney could not shake the feeling that something had shifted rather than ended. The earlier incidents, the photograph, the taps, the responsive flicker of lights had carried a strange sense of interaction, almost a hesitant communication. What lingered now felt different. It was not active in obvious ways. It was attentive. The hallway felt aware of her when she passed through it. The air seemed to register her pauses. The sensation was subtle but persistent, like the faint pressure that builds before a storm that never quite breaks. The moment that stripped away the last of her doubt came without warning. It was early evening. Her mother stood in the kitchen speaking quietly on the phone, her voice carefully controlled as though she were managing both conversation and emotion at the same time. Sydney sat at the dining table, half listening, half scrolling through her phone. The television murmured in the living room, tuned to a channel neither of them was actually watching. Without flicker or hesitation, the television powered off. The click was unmistakable, the clean, decisive sound of electronics responding to a remote that no one had touched. Sydney looked immediately toward the living room. The remote rested on the coffee table exactly where it had been all evening. Her mother's voice faltered mid-sentence. Before either of them could move, the television powered back on. Static filled the screen. White noise hissed softly into the room, sharp against the otherwise controlled quiet of the house. Sydney stood slowly from her chair and took a step toward the living room. The static shifted, rolling and reshaping itself in uneven waves of light and shadow. For a brief, almost imperceptible moment, the distortion darkened in one corner of the screen, forming the suggestion of a small silhouette. It was not detailed. It did not have a face. But its proportions were unmistakably childlike. Then it dissolved back into static. The television shut off again. Silence returned to the house. Her mother stepped into the living room, still holding the phone loosely in her hand. She stared at the blank screen for several long seconds before speaking. "He wouldn't scare us," she said quietly. Sydney did not answer because the thought had already taken root in her mind. What if whatever had been responding to them had learned what shape to take? What if it understood what they were hoping for? Later that night, Sydney found herself standing in the hallway again, though she had promised herself she would stop doing that. The closet door remained closed, the hallway light casting a steady glow along the runner rug. The house felt suspended, as if it were waiting. She did not plan her words this time. "I don't know what you are," she said into the quiet space, her voice steady but low. "But you are not him." The hallway light flickered once, then steadied. Sydney felt her pulse quicken, but she held her ground. "You don't get to use his name," she continued. "You don't get to pretend." The closet light turned on behind the closed door. The glow slipped through the narrow seam along the frame, outlining the panel with thin brightness. Sydney took a slow step forward. Her breathing felt deliberate now, controlled. "Stop!" she said firmly. The sliding door moved, not violently, not with a bang. It shifted along its track in a smooth, steady motion, inch by inch, until the interior of the closet stood exposed. The bulb inside illuminated the space clearly. Coats hung undisturbed. The vacuum leaned where it always had. The carpet lay empty. And yet the air in the hallway changed. It thickened in a way that was not about temperature, but about pressure. The atmosphere seemed to tighten around her shoulders and chest as if the space itself were aware of her refusal. From inside the closet came a sound, and at first it was indistinct, a soft vibration, like fabric brushing lightly against drywall. Then it clarified. It was laughter. Low and stretched, shaped like the memory of a child's giggle, but stripped of warmth. The cadence was wrong, the breath absent. It rose at the end as if attempting to mimic something joyful, but it carried none of the lightness that had once filled the house. Sydney felt the last fragile thread of hope snap inside her. "That's not him," she said, her voice steady despite the tremor in her hands. The laughter stopped abruptly. Behind her, she heard her mother's bedroom door open. Footsteps approached cautiously. "You're not him," Sydney repeated, louder now. A sudden violent thud struck the back wall of the closet. The frame rattled sharply, the impact loud enough to reverberate down the hallway. Her mother gasped as she reached Sydney's side. The light inside the closet flared briefly, then settled. Sydney stepped closer despite her mother's whispered plea to leave it alone. She leaned slightly forward and looked inside. The closet was empty, but on the drywall near the baseboard was a fresh indentation, shallow but undeniable, roughly circular and no larger than a small fist. The reality of it settled heavily into her chest. Whatever had answered their grief had understood them well enough to imitate comfort. It had responded gently at first. It had offered signs shaped like memory. And when confronted, it had shed the imitation without hesitation. Sydney straightened and spoke clearly into the open space. The hallway light flickered twice, then everything stilled. The air lost its pressure. The hum of the house returned. The moment felt less like a victory and more like a boundary drawn in the sand. Sydney reached forward and slid the closet door shut herself, firmly this time, guiding it along its track until it rested flush in the frame. She turned off the closet light and stood there a moment longer, breathing slowly until her heartbeat steadied. In the days that followed, she made deliberate changes. She deleted the photograph permanently. She stopped whispering into the hallway. She refused to speak her brother's name into empty air. Her mother replaced the closet bulb with a brighter one and left the door open during the day, refusing to allow shadows to collect. The activity faded gradually, not with drama, but with withdrawal. No more taps, no more lights, no more laughter echoing with borrowed shape. Within 2 weeks, the house felt like drywall and wiring again. Predictable, contained. The grief remained, it would always remain. But it no longer reached outward the way it had in those early weeks, no longer stretched into the dark in search of a response. Sydney understood something then that she wished she had understood at the beginning. Grief does not simply sit inside a person. It radiates. It calls. It opens doors in ways no one intends. And sometimes, when something answers, it is not because it loved. It is because it was listening. And in that narrow hallway, beneath the steady glow of a closet light, something had been patient enough to learn exactly what shape would be welcomed inside.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.